Hello, everyone, and welcome to Big News Wednesdays here at the Damage Report. I am John Arola, joined as almost always on Wednesdays by JR Jackson. JR, how's it going?
I'm just making sure that I'm ready, you know.
Yeah.
And the main thing I'd like to do is drive your producer crazy. Because she's very nice people, so you make sure you ruffle their feathers enough to make sure that they're still on their toes. I like to see people JR. Freak out.
That's my job, is to frustrate her and make her think that we're never gonna get through the news, and especially not this D block that we keep kicking down the road. Anyway, thank you for being here. Feels like it's been a while.
It has. How was the week, man?
I don't even want to think about it. It was so good.
Oh, really?
So good.
That started to sound like I don't want to think about it because it was so bad, is what I thought you were gonna say.
No, it was great. I just ate and read, watched some old movies. Like, there's this genre of, for people who don't know what I'm talking about, I took Monday through Thursday off last week.
Everyone knows genre of movies. Everyone knew you were gone.
Most people. Like, so 40 Days and 40 Nights, She's Out of My League, like movies like that, like about like 20 to 30 somethings, gross out rom-coms or whatever. And I just rewatched a bunch of those. And then I rewatched like Cruel Intentions. Like, it was a weird nostalgic sort of vacation.
Wait,
but I enjoyed it.
Which one? I know there's 40 Days and 40 Nights. Is that the one with like Anne Heche and what's his name?
No.
Harrison Ford? It was something about so many days and nights with them.
Yeah, no, this is slightly different. This is Josh Hartnett. Look it up.
Oh, okay, okay. Because the other one must have been like 6 days and six nights or something like that. It was
something like that.
A girlfriend in high school.
28 nights later, actually. There were some zombies and dating. Anyway, there's also news. So we're going to talk about that. But JR, thank you for being here because we got a lot to talk about. Some history to talk about, some signs that Joe Biden is fundamentally going to change his approach to those who seek to stymie his entire agenda, but probably not. So we've got that. We're going to say goodbye to one of the great blogs of the past 3.5 weeks. So we've got, and good news. We've got some good news. 6 days, seven nights, Donna Bolton tells us in the chat.
6 days, so, 7 nights, exactly.
6 days, seven nights. I have not seen that.
Watch that one.
I've watched 40 Days, 40 Nights probably 8 times in my life, but I've never seen that. I've never seen any of the good movies that Ben Mankiewicz has suggested to me. Classics, because I keep watching this Josh Hartnett gross out comedy. Anyway.
Before we get to the good and bad news, I just want to say one thing because it's I don't consider myself a journalist. I also don't consider myself being in the streets all the time doing things to affect real, I think, real change. We talk about, and I think it gets people motivated, which is a part of it. But I got a friend who I grew up with, lives in St. Louis. He lost his oldest son to gun violence, as many people do. And it's stuck with me, obviously more because I know him and I feel his pain. But anyway, he asked me to point out this thing. It's happening in St. Charles, Missouri. Forgive the quick promo, but it's happening in St. Charles, Missouri at Frontier Park Pavilion 2 this Friday, June 4th at 10 o'clock in the morning. It's a Wear Orange event where they said there's gonna be a memorial to Missouri children killed by guns. So you'll get a chance to be there, represent the family you may have lost, write to your legislator for some kind of change to happen. There's things that you can actually effectively touch. You know, you can paint a rock orange, take it home, bring it to your garden, just to show the mass numbers of people that have been affected by this, and hopefully ways to change it. If the citizenry comes out and talks to our legislators and really shows that they want to change it, man, because we hear about it and talk about it all the time. And then those people who have been affected by it, after the news cycle ends, they continue to feel. And yeah. I'm just hoping for this, even if this small point, if you're anywhere in the St. Charles area in Missouri, near where I grew up, get out there and show some support. If you've been affected, you know, be there for everyone else and for your family member or friend that you have lost. But I just want to point out, and much love to my friend who had to go, still having to go through this, and will continue to go through this for the rest of his life. It's a horrible thing, but it's a Wear Orange event out in St. Charles, Riverside Drive, St. Charles, Missouri. Frontier Park is where it's being held.
Awesome.
If you can.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, I mean, obviously, a lot of states have dealt with this. That is definitely a state that has had to deal with a lot of gun violence. So, thank you, JR. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And with that, thank you all for being here, whether you're on YouTube or Twitch. We appreciate you being here. Please share the stream, like the stream so people know we're live. And if you want to send us messages, super chats, tweets, members, comments, things like that, we'll respond as we go. But that said, Why don't we launch into the news? While Joe Biden was giving his address commemorating and recognizing the massacre in Tulsa, which we're gonna talk about later on the program, he also finally seemed to indicate an understanding of some of the political opposition to his agenda, which does not just come in the form of Republicans. So here he is, almost criticizing by name some of the Democrats who are stopping most of his agenda from making it through the Senate.
Today, as for the act of voting itself, I urge voting rights groups in this country to begin to redouble their efforts now to register and educate voters. And in June should be a month of action on Capitol Hill. I hear all the folks on TV saying, why doesn't Biden get this done? Well, because Biden only has a majority of effectively 4 votes in the House and a tie in the Senate, with 2 members of the Senate who vote more with my Republican friends. But we're not giving up.
Well, we're going to evaluate that we're not giving up thing. And so, 2 members of the Senate that vote more with our friends. Stop calling them your friends. They're not your friends. They want you to fail. Your whole life's dream, they want it to go down in flames. If those are your friends, you need to get yourself some new friends. But, and in some of the news coverage of this, JR, there's people saying like, well, they don't technically vote more with the Republicans, they vote with, but yeah, okay, whatever, it doesn't matter. That's not the issue. They stop things from even making it to a vote by allowing the filibuster to continue or outright opposing the actual bill. So it's not that we can't get the For the People Act just because Manchin won't reform the filibuster. He doesn't support the act either. So yeah, he does. They don't vote on literally everything against him. They're stopping the most important stuff. Shut up. Stop being so immature.
That's anyway. The whole point. That's the whole point about this. It's supposed to disrupt the actual message that the things that Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin are doing, not that they're voting directly against Biden and his agenda, which partially they are, but not that they're voting directly against it, but the fact is that they're not doing the steps that will allow the Democrats and his agenda to have some kind of footing in it. So we know that the Republicans are continuously blocking everything blindly, no matter what, just to make things horrible because they're upset about losing. And after, and once they're doing that, then if you just allow them to do it and let them run the government from a minority position, that's kneecapping your own agenda. Let's keep it real. Yes, maybe the words weren't exactly right with that, but that's now allowing us to talk about, oh, well, technically, are they actually voting against him? Listen, we're dealing with an ex-president that still has an entire party telling him that he won an election. Are we gonna keep pointing that out? Maybe tell him to shut up and get off of news waves? Yes, they tried that, but he's still talking. So when we're talking about nitpicking with little details like that, but we have this huge lie coming from the former president and this active lie coming from people who are still active members and elected members of the party, I don't think we need to talk about those little differences, but we do need to talk about the fact that these two that he called out, no, they're not voting against him every time, but they are facilitating people who are.
Exactly. Let's evaluate that video. It's driven a lot of headlines. Is he criticizing Manchin and Sinema? Well, look, he won't even name him. Does that matter? I mean, everybody knows who he's talking about. So does it matter that he doesn't name them? It's yes. All this big. Okay, so why? Why does it matter?
It matters because, listen, it goes back to the same idea when he went with the my friends on the other side, and you said they're not your friends, they're fighting against you. So if you don't point out the two people who are the ones that are essentially blocking legislation in your agenda and the things that the majority of American people want, let's get beyond just it being Biden's agenda. But these aspects, there's things that Biden wants to do that many Americans, many progressives aren't cool with. But there are some things that Biden is now doing that he's been influenced to do that many progressives have been pushing him to do, and now he's leaning that direction. And of course, you're gonna get pushback from establishment from both sides of the aisle. So we do need to point out that they're assisting the opposition to do these things. Call them out, say them by name. If we don't say them by name, the people who aren't paying that close of attention will be like, oh, look again, because this is the way the layman approaches, because this is how I was in like 2000 when I didn't vote in the first presidential election. I was like, oh, it doesn't matter, it's all the same. I didn't care who the next guy was and who the Speaker of the House was and who the minority leader was, all that stuff. And I wasn't even the most clueless political person. I just didn't care that much. So if you don't call them out by name, you just go, oh, there's two people. They'll be like, oh, which two people are those? I don't know the 100 senators. I don't know the 50 Democratic senators that are on here. No one knows that, but the majority of people in the country, I feel, don't know that. And if they listen to you talk about Tulsa, which might bring them to your speech, now you have more ears and more eyes.
Exactly.
Call out the people as who they are.
Yeah, especially when, I mean, you know, a line could be drawn from, you know, this racial violence to the filibuster, which has been used to fight against civil rights for a century now. So those who are upholding it, you know, that is, they are a continuing part of a tradition that goes back a long way in American politics, but that is 10 steps beyond anything that Biden is willing to say. So we're gonna turn to how this is likely to play out in the future in a minute. I just wanna focus briefly on the other part of what he said, which is people say, Joe Biden, why aren't you doing this? Hey man, I only got four people in the house and it's a 50-50. Okay, so first of all, you're the president, stop whining. Seriously, like man, it would be great to have more stuff. Okay, but this is what you have. So what are you gonna do? And the thing is, like there are political realities. It's possible that even if he deployed every possible recommendation that, like, you know, like he gets Nina Turner in the room and she tells him exactly how to go at Joe Manchin or whatever, maybe it fails. Okay. Then what if we're supposed to give you credit by understanding these political realities that hamper you or whatever? Okay, but the thing is, we're going to evaluate the other stuff about you that you have more direct control over. So can Joe Manchin stop some of this legislation? Sure. I mean, he's stopping it without you really putting a cost on him for doing that, so I'm still going to judge you. But what about all the stuff you could be doing via executive order, like that you could easily do yourself? It doesn't matter if you only have four in the House and it's a 50-50 Senate. You could absolve student loan debt right now. But you're not doing that either. And it's not to say that he's not doing anything. You know, we're not the ridiculous grifters who can't see reality. Like, we're gonna give him credit on a couple of things later on this show. But if you're not willing to do that stuff, then you're, well, come on, just have faith and give me a little bit more time as I waste more and more weeks working with Joe Manchin. I start to wonder how honest and serious you're actually being when in these areas where you have direct 100% control, you're not actually doing it.
Yeah, we're getting some shades of Obama's first term, you know, the first half of his first term. So, and again, Joe Biden was there. So I wonder, this is the only question, this is the last hope I'm holding out for him as far as this part of the issue, is he's given a certain amount of time, maybe he has an internal deadline. And he's like, now I'm gonna ratchet up to the level of, I'm gonna call them out without calling them out. Okay, fine, it's not the route I would go, but maybe you wanna give them a warning. Hey, I'm on the verge of saying your name, which, why is that such a big deal? Because that's their name and that's what they're doing. And every time Joe Manchin goes in front of a camera and likes to talk to reporters about how he's not gonna disrupt the system and destroy the Senate and all that stuff, he puts his name and his face on that. He says that and it's pretty deplorable. So why can't you say what he's doing from another perspective about what he's doing? He's saying what he's doing. Why can't I say what he's doing? You know? Yeah. So it's not even that big of a deal to put a name on it, but hopefully maybe there's some endpoint where he's like, okay, before you ruin my whole first term and then we go into these midterms and people run against me based off me doing nothing, and then progressives now turned on me too because I've still done nothing. Let me give this maybe deadline. It's been a few months. Maybe he's looking for a summertime. Maybe he's looking for the end of summertime before he decides.
How about the 4th of July?
Yeah, there's always these hanging like parts of the summer. Memorial Day, 4th of July, you know, then August because of the recess when everyone in Congress just leaves for a month, because that's great. Let's not forget about that part either. Maybe before the August recess.
Maybe. Okay. So Joe Biden's agenda hangs razor's edge, all that stuff. Is it actually gonna happen? It's really not looking like it, but we're supposed to pretend that there's a good chance because after all, maybe he will turn and fight against Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema. I don't know, he still hasn't used their names, but as JR has been saying, maybe he's getting ready to, that would be something. We're gonna have a little bit more of his speech in just a second. I just wanna throw out sort of a hypothetical because we have what Joe Biden is actually doing, which is, there's two people and they don't support me. I don't recall their names, but they're, what if there was a president who was completely willing to torch even members of his own party, even unfairly, calling them names, like supporting their primary opponents, hounding them on social media? What possible effect could that have? Could it possibly, oh, I don't know, result in him having everything he wants from his party? Yes, we have that example. The entire Republican Party was terrified of Donald Trump calling them out and making
was
bad. Well, they still are. It's totally true. And he's not even president anymore. Joe Biden is president. He is the de facto leader of the Democratic Party, which is not just a symbolic thing. He can turn the Democratic Party against some of them, support primary challengers, throw money against them, run ads against them. He can go and do rallies and stuff like that. These are all things that he could do. But he's acting as if, well, I don't know, no president has ever exercised, like ever used the bully pulpit before, let alone against their own party. No, they totally could. Now we're gonna talk about those possibilities. Here is a little bit more of what Joe Biden actually had to say about the path he sees forward for some of the most important pieces of legislation.
Earlier this year, the House of Representatives passed For the People Act to protect our democracy. The Senate will take it up later this month, and I'm going to fight like heck with every tool at my disposal for its passage. The House is also working on the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, which is critical to providing new legal tools to combat the new assault on the right to vote.
Okay, so how like heck is he going to fight? I don't know. He won't even say the word hell about it. So doesn't seem super strong right off the bat. I'm going to fight like golly gee willikers. I'm going to go at them with everything I've got. Okay, JR, how much is he going to go at him? Are we going to hear their names? Is he going to say the word mansion?
Well, okay, this is the thing. When you make declarations like this, you're setting yourself up to either do it or then be talked about for not doing it. Again, he said like he wants to get rid of student loan debt. You point this out a lot. And he says, oh, but like heck, they won't do it. But hey, bro, you can do it. People will point out what that is in your toolbox. Yeah, you can point out, hey, I'm gonna utilize every tool in my toolbox to make sure this works. The problem is your toolbox is clear, it's transparent. Everyone can see what's in it because along those same lines, we know what's in your toolbox. And even folks who don't know what all is in your toolbox, there's experts that do know what's in your toolbox, and they will talk about what it is that you can and cannot do after the Senate potentially doesn't do those things. So you make these declarations about what you're gonna do and how hard you're gonna be on things, but you gotta finally do it. And that's, we'll see if the toolbox gets opened, because this sounds like the approach he's done before. This is what I'm gonna do. We have to do it. I'm gonna pressure, make them do it. And then when they don't do it, he kind of goes, I need them to do it for me. And suddenly you don't have any tools left. You're just using your hands. Now, last thing, the reason Joe Biden likes to go through these things is he's in a sweet spot right now. He's in a point where Republicans really are grasping it. They really are. They're grasping at straws for ways to criticize him. They can't find anything to criticize him about. They couldn't even find a way to criticize him on the Palestinian and Israeli conflicts because he was on their side. So everywhere he goes, he's still laying in this very hard, he's everything is bouncing off him because only people who have an issue with him are progressives. And who listens to progressives, you know, in general?
I mean, there's a growing people voice in our audience right now, that's about it.
Yeah, people in power are like, oh, progressives, you know, that's why they're trying to push on him so hard. Joe Biden is this Bernie Sanders progressive. And then everyone laughs and doesn't make any sense. They're having trouble having things stick to him. So he doesn't want to do anything that's even one step outside of the normalcy of being, you know, Grandpa Joe that no one touches because he hasn't offended anyone yet. So he's still looking to not offend.
Oh, no, JR, you just gave me an idea. We all have to start a Joe Manchin fan club. If progressives all like him, then the Democratic establishment doesn't give a damn about him anymore. They can mock him, they can spit in his face, they'll throw him to the side like he's nothing. All we have to do is make like a Manchin So Punk t-shirt or something like that. If we say we like him, he's gone.
We can do the hope and change coloring thing that Obama had and put like, oh, we can't mock him. We have to go hope and retain the Senate.
Yes. If this is what's necessary. Okay, we're gonna work on that. Hashtag I like Manchin. I don't even like joking about that. But anyway, okay, so that's what Biden is gonna do really fast. What do Manchin and Sinema think about him almost naming them? Well, neither of them responded to requests for comment from the Hill. But I will say, you know, we went through Manchin last week saying we're gonna get this Capitol investigation. There's good Republicans out there. There's no need to mess with the filibuster. And then no, there were not good Republicans. They're not doing it. And so we're like, oh, I totally wonder, will he change as a result of this new information? No. He told reporters yesterday, I'm not separating our country, okay? I don't know what you all don't understand about this. You ask the same question every day, it's wrong. I mean, he's kind of right there. People do keep asking him the same stupid question because they know the answer. He's not being honest. He's not like, well, I won't reform the filibuster because there's this alternative. He doesn't think that alternative exists. He's not that stupid. He's lying to you.
Absolutely.
And yeah, so Sinema didn't have anything to say. By the way, she didn't even vote in that legislation. She told AZ Central she missed the vote because she had a family matter. Sure. She seems honest. Mm-hmm. I definitely believe. Just be vague, be super vague, and I totally trust you. It's not that you don't want to go on the record as supporting it in advance of you like switching to the Republican Party or something. Anyway, well, final also, wrinkle to this, JR.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that he said with the voting rights legislation, he's going to be asking Vice President Harris to help these efforts and lead them among her many other responsibilities. With I honestly don't know what she's tasked with lately. But anyway, with her leadership and your support, we're gonna overcome again, but it's gonna take a hell of a lot of work. So Harris is gonna be dispatched to make this happen. Does that raise the chance that it happens?
Maybe, I guess. I mean, again, you can send out your vice president to go and do some of the things that you don't wanna have to do to make yourself, in your mind, Joe Biden's mind, look bad. Or give them any ammunition to fire at you, you know? Let them fire Kamala Harris. I'm not sure if that's what the thought is here, mm-hmm. or that she's better at this than you are. Maybe it's both. But yeah. I mean, I like the development mostly based on the fact that I do think she has more of a push and a fire and an approach the way she's gonna speak about this that I think maybe can help. At least it'll change the narrative. It's definitely not gonna change the minds of people like Joe Manchin and any Republican. In fact, they probably invite it so they can have a new angle to attack the first female black vice president that they can. And they figure that's a winning strategy. Trust, the only thing Republicans care about, especially ones that are still in office right now, is winning the next midterm election. Mm-hmm. That's all they care about. And now they're looking for targets. And maybe Kamala gives them a new one. But I don't care if she says the right things.
Harris wants to presumably be president in like 4 years, probably. Like she has to know her odds of winning if these bills are allowed to stand in all these states the Republicans control, like, is much worse. So like just be like coldly ambitious in a good way for once. Like do the right thing, even for the worst selfish reasons. Ugh, I don't know. I don't know if she actually will. The audience did help out with one thing though. There's a lot in what Sinema said that's hard to decipher, but someone pointed out that the family matter she had to attend to was almost certainly a rerun of the classic 90s sitcom. This week, Joe Biden commemorated in an address what happened in Tulsa, the devastating massacre that for most of the last century, most Americans were completely kept in the dark by an education system and a government that wanted to pretend that horrific acts of racial violence like that didn't happen and don't happen. Well, he gave an address. So we're gonna show you just a little bit of it. Here is some of what the president had to say.
And our laws and our culture. We do ourselves no favors by pretending none of this ever happened or it doesn't impact us today, because it does still impact us today. We can't just choose to learn what we want to know and not what we should know. We should know the good, the bad, everything. That's what great nations do. They come to terms with their dark sides. And we're a great nation. The only way to build a common ground is to truly repair and to rebuild. I come here to help fill the silence, because in silence, wounds deepen.
Okay, well, look, Biden has said that he wants to repair the soul of America and all of that. And that often doesn't end up meaning much, but I think this is an example of that in practice. Him doing, it's a very low bar for an American president, but to actually go to Tulsa, which no president has done, and acknowledge it and to speak about it. That is certainly something. We've got a lot more information, all that that we're going to talk about. But JR, what'd you think about that speech?
Yeah, okay, he's saying the right things again, like, you know, with many of these things. What's the next step? No, I didn't watch the address in full and see what his proposals may be next. Were there proposals? Is there something that's coming down the line on the agenda when in the House, and it's going to lead to the Senate? Are we going to, we're already dealing with the battle back and forth about critical race theory, which many people fighting against. Do they even know what it is? Do they know what the purpose is of it? Or do they think this is a Black Lives Matter hatched scheme to run in the streets and hold up signs and tell you about what you're missing? Because that's not what it is. So yeah, it's a matter of whether or not we're gonna not just, again, just say the right things or then do the right things afterwards. Because he says all the right things and it sounds great. Now what are we gonna do to make sure we educate our nation on who we really are, what our real history is, what we've really done? And to the point where people don't have to be embarrassed about their grandfathers and great grandfathers and great great grandfathers being the horrific people that they were. It doesn't have any legacy on you unless you want it to be. Yeah. So people can continue to try and push back and say, oh man, I can't believe you guys are coming after me and talking about my heritage. If your heritage is based in hatred, murder, and genocide for profit, I think you might want to rethink your heritage. A lot of people have people that they came from that weren't very good. Maybe you had a horrific alcoholic abusive grandfather. Doesn't mean you have to be one. Doesn't mean that you have to say, that's not my grandfather. My grandfather was a bad person. He did this, he did this, he did that. I'm not that person. Why is it so hard to do that?
That's maturity.
But critical race theory is just analyzing the way that we've always had the basis for racism in our country and how it has been applied to every aspect of our lives to this day. If it's ingrained in our society, it still lives. It can't be separate from the way that you point out that the Confederacy is your heritage and you're still carrying around the Confederate flag. That means it didn't go away. That means it's ingrained in you. That means it's still there and thriving, right?
Yeah.
So if our past also has a rampant racism, which came after slavery, genocide, murdering of people, separating from their families, maiming and killing them for sport and for fun, because that did happen. But if we don't acknowledge that happened, we can ignore it and act like it's still not there. So when you ingrain something in your society and it's still there, and because you haven't rid yourself of it, same way you like to praise your Confederate flag, if your Confederate flag still has some kind of meaning to you, that means the things that happened when that Confederate flag was being hoisted by traitors to the nation still has something to do with our country too. Yeah. And the things they stood for is what we're trying to, we need to analyze and expose to people who've always been told it was just a few people who held a couple slaves and kept them in some small houses and they worked in the fields and sang and drank and were just fine. Because that's the picture that we paint about our history in this country. And we don't want to see the reality, because you know what that means? It means we can stop saying glowing things on Martin Luther King's birthday and point out how Harriet Tubman was this great abolitionist and maybe put her on the $10 bill or $20 bill, whatever they're trying to put her on. And then afterwards go, okay, everything is fine, right? No, it's still ingrained in our society. We still have people in this day in every profession, from teachers to doctors to lawyers to judges to taxi drivers to politicians to businessmen to anyone who affects every other aspect of someone else's life. That's still it's ingrained in them, in our system, as to the way it works. Yes, you can be a Black police officer and still take part in the way that we destroy the people that are the others. So just because a Black police officer is involved doesn't mean that it's still not the same system we've always worked in, where the white police officers are doing the same thing, and the Latino police officers and the Asian police officers, because we've seen in every instance, every race has done this because it's systemic. You see it in front of your face. So every time you push back and say, oh, the minority was doing it, that's why this is a systemic problem. You don't know you're proving our point, but you don't want to continue that conversation because you just might look that bad.
Yeah. Well, and they certainly don't want people to be able to draw a line from, you know, the insane violence that we're talking about here to the continuing efforts to disenfranchise and economically beat down whole communities. Pretend it didn't happen in the past, so you don't have to take it happening now seriously. While also, you know, like bringing it up randomly, like Tucker Carlson talking about how if there were separate water fountains, the unvaccinated would have to use one or something. Like, so they get that that stuff did exist when it's able to be used to make them seem like the victims now, but not in the past. You know, very, very well said. There's no There's no benefit, there's nothing gained in pretending that the past was rosy and that we never did anything wrong. That's not how anything works. Now that said, let's talk about some of the substance of this. So Joe Biden giving his speech about the massacre in Tulsa is, I think, a pretty important, at least political part of really making sure that America has to reckon with it. As we talked about less than, I think, like a week ago on the show, in popular culture, there have been multiple depictions of what happened in Tulsa, including in Watchmen and in Lovecraft Country recently. Those two shows have done more than the entire public education system has for a century, basically to teach people about that. Just in case you have missed the recent conversation about it, on May 31st, 1921, a white mob descended on Black Wall Street, a prosperous black neighborhood in Tulsa. Over the next 2 days, they murdered more than 300 people, burned down 40 city blocks, and left 10,000 black residents homeless. A mass grave that may contain the remains of the victim has recently been discovered. Survivors have been petitioning for reparations for decades. And that violence started after the arrest of Dick Rowland, a 19-year-old black shoeshiner, who was accused of assault against Sarah Page, a 17-year-old white elevator operator. Accounts vary about what happened, but a common theory suggests Mr. Rowland tripped and grabbed on the arm of Miss Page while trying to catch his fall. She screamed and he ran away, according to the commission report. Regardless of how it started, though, it resulted in a bunch of white people grabbing guns and murdering hundreds of people in what would be described, when it was described, and it often wasn't described, as a riot. It wasn't a riot. It was a massacre. It was targeted destruction of a wealthy black area. That's what it was.
Wasn't random white folks. It was random white folks that were taking part, but it was backed by the state and the system and the authorities took part in it.
Yeah.
That's part of the system.
Exactly. And thankfully, now that people are talking about Tulsa, they're also acknowledging that it is not a one-off. It's not the only horrible thing that's happened. I actually saw Brooke Thomas tweeted out a thread talking about others, say, were you taught about any of these in school? And honestly, maybe we were taught about Tulsa. I really doubt it. I don't remember ever being taught about that, and certainly not about these others. Mm-hmm. But we do want to at least briefly acknowledge these others. So Common tweeted out this map of different massacres, just so many over so many years. This history is not far from you and a significant part of America. Wherever you are, it's not far. So let's talk about a few. In Elaine, Arkansas in 1919, that was a bad summer. The red summer of 1919, dozens of racist attacks and massacres. One of the worst was in Elaine, in which at least 200 black farmers and their families were slaughtered. Farmers had recently unionized and were planning to bypass the unfair sharecropping system. By the way, just with Tulsa and with this, you can't miss that there's a massive economic component to this. This is not just racial. Definitely racial, yes, but it's economic as well. 200 black families, farmers and their families, that's right on the level of Tulsa, JR. And yeah. I don't hear that talked about ever.
Ever. No. And again, people who do know about Tulsa, which again, I didn't learn in school, I had to learn later. But even after I learned about that, no, the numbers of all these different ones and specific instances and things that triggered them, no, I didn't know about all these either. You know about a few of them here and there, but this is the whole point. Now it's 2021 and there's this age of information we've been in for a while now. And before that, if it wasn't taught in schools, put in books by the powers that be, who really tells you that? You get told that by the people who experienced it, who tell their kids, who then who tell their kids. That's how people knew about it. It was put in some other books that people wrote and put in, but it definitely wasn't mandatory education so you to learn about your country. It just wasn't, and it still isn't, and this fight continues.
Yeah, there's Festy Bestie in Twitch is like, I grew up in Tulsa. We were taught about the Trail of Tears, but not about what happened in Tulsa. Yeah, even being there. Let's talk about a few others. So Ocoee, I believe that's correct pronunciation. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing it. In Florida, back in 1920, when local black men and women attempted to vote, white mobs responded by burning a black church and killing at least 6 people. Some say the death toll was more like 60. Some survivors claimed bodies were dumped in a mass grave, as in Tulsa. Ocoee officials have made no attempt to investigate the claim, although city officials did apologize and installed a memorial plaque in 2020. It was the worst instance of Election Day violence in American history. And that feels much like Tulsa. Just pretend that it didn't happen, refuse to look for information, hope that you wait long enough that the information will disappear. And finally, in Rosewood, Florida in 1923, well, finally for this segment, but as you can see in the map that Common had tweeted out, there are many of these worthy of investigation. Rosewood was a successful black town in the Florida Pine Woods until it was burned to the ground by a white mob seeking revenge for the supposed assault of a white woman. At least 6 people were killed, perhaps more. Survivors waded through swamps in their night clothes to escape. A 1994 law allowed descendants of Rosewood residents to attend state colleges tuition free, the first example of a legislative body in the United States giving reparations to African Americans. And every one of those dots, and probably many more on that map we showed you, is at least as horrific, worse than so many other historical incidents that we do learn about. But the things that the status quo, the powers that be have chosen to allow us to learn, reinforces certain narratives. Other historical events which might undermine those or teach us other aspects of who we are socially, culturally, economically, in terms of our government, are not talked about.
Yeah, there's,
so thankfully that's changing a little bit.
If you've succeeded in allowing the minority of people, and not just based off of race, minority of humans, Americans in this country, to learn about these things, then you have the support of the majority of Americans who are like, what are they talking about? Race riots and massacres and state sponsored executions of people just based off of their race and where they're living and how they're thriving? Oh, that doesn't happen in America. I never heard about that.
Yeah.
And the majority of people, because we made sure that they didn't learn about that, are their starting point is, this sounds like a fantasy. This never happened. I didn't learn about it. Because we have this utmost trust in our education system to teach people and teach us the reality of the situation. And if, again, we go back to, hey, if you don't agree with it, or if you push back against what we were taught and how we were taught, you're now un-American. Yeah. Not the way we did it was un-American. If you just push back against what is, because now you know reality, that's un-American. And it makes people then recoil again and go, well, I don't want to be called un-American. Let me make sure that I just shut up. It's just, it's a playbook, and it's a tired playbook, and we've seen it a million times, but it still works on so many people.
Yeah. There's one final comment. I mean, there's so much obviously we could talk about here. One final comment. Pierre Alicia acknowledged that almost all of these are, the excuse it's given is it's about an assault of a white woman. It points out like what percentage of the white men that participated in those murderous mobs habitually beat their wives, just constantly beat their wives, rape their wives when they wanted to. Oh yeah, they care about assaults against white women. That's what's really motivating them. Not racism, not economic, fears and jealousy of successful areas. Yeah, they're really worried about women being violated in some way. There was a period back before YouTube and TikTok and podcasts and all that. It was the blogger era. Some great blogs. That was where you got your news. And gradually over time, it's faded away, and we've lost a lot of the great blogs. And unfortunately, today we've lost another, killed off so young. I saw this on Twitter. Aaron Rupar tweeted, "Trump's blog appears to be gone." Remember, yeah, Trump had his blog. It was like mini Twitter, but just for him, and even sadder somehow. Well, the site had only existed since the start of May. It was launched on May 4th, by the way. That was less than 1 month ago, almost exactly 2 Scaramucci's. It had reportedly been recording very poor traffic because, of course, my old Angel Fire page, the guest book, doesn't get that many comments these days. It's inconvenient. That site ticker isn't going up like it used to. And apparently it's not a mistake, it is gone. Trump senior aide Jason Miller told CNBC that the Little Red blog, quote, will not be returning. It was just auxiliary to the broader efforts we have and are working on. Hoping to have more information on the broader efforts soon, but I do not have a precise awareness of timing. So it's killed. We don't even have a replacement. I got nothing, but oh my God, it just did not work.
We're working on the broader efforts. Listen, we have broader efforts going on. We're gonna make sure that we advance his agenda going forward with a very detailed approach. That detailed approach, we're gonna figure out later. I don't have no idea what the hell I'm talking about, but we have one.
It was never going to work because look, does Trump want to send stupid, rambly, insane messages to his fans? Yes. But he wants the replies and the retweets. He wants that so bad and he wasn't getting it.
He also feeds off of a-holes on Twitter that tweet certain things, or then goes on Fox News and says, idiot Ducey said this on Fox News and tweets it out himself, and then generates response and then retweets. Yeah, it's a generating system. We know why it's positive, why it works for a lot of people, because you get to interact. And Donald Trump, who has low self-esteem, knows he's a piece of garbage, has to continually get people to prop him up. That's why he liked his rallies. That's why he had to go to those things. He needed people. He had to soak up minions telling him he's a good person, because when he goes home at night and looks in the mirror, he goes, look at that horrible person. I can't look at him anymore. He probably broke all the mirrors in his house to make sure he doesn't have to look at his own face. So he wants to make sure that other people say, hey, Donald, I like your face. And then Photoshop that ugly face onto some Rambo body or something.
Man, oh, sir.
So he can continue to think that he's a good, decent person. But if he has to sit alone in his own solitude of his own insane brain, he's gonna start punching himself in the face.
Well, look, he apparently is gonna have those rallies soon. Maybe with it getting the blog getting so little traffic and the rallies about to start, it just doesn't seem like it's worth the work. I don't know. Look, I will say I feel a little bit bad for him. I feel like we've all been there. All of us have started some new project, some new habit, and we're just gonna do it. You know, I'm a gym guy now, or I'm gonna do my podcast. And then like 3 weeks later, it's like, well, this is actually kind of tough. Like, I'm just gonna let it die.
You have to keep
and that's
keep
what he waking. Did.
Yeah, do I have to keep waking up at 5:30 to get to the gym by 6?
I have to edit videos. I don't want to edit videos. I've had games of D&D that I've started. Grand plans for this massive story. It's like, oh, I got to prep every week. No. That's how the creator economy works. Sometimes you go bankrupt, and he is admittedly a bit of an expert in that. Anyway. Okay, I think that that's more time than he's probably worth. It didn't last as long as like Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Oh, sure, man.
So, this should at least been a good PR move. At least stretch it to 2 days from now. Stretch it to the 4th and then go, yeah, I mean, it was an experimental thing. We wanted to run for a month, pre-planned. It's been exactly a month. It's obvious that it was planned. He ran it for 1 month and we generated plenty of activity. And now we're moving on to better things. Now that we've generated our nobody would buy that lie, but it'd be great to try.
He's such an idiot, man. I literally have given this bit of advice. It's probably pretty obvious, but I've given this advice multiple times. When you start something like this, a show, a podcast, whatever, you don't just start it. You start it for X episodes. X weeks, whatever. It's a 10 episode thing. And here's the thing, if it works and if you like it, you just keep going. Nobody's like, nope, you said 10 episodes. You have to stop now. Get off of the internet, sir. Nobody does that. But if it's not working, hey, I planned this all along. It's a face saving measure, but his face can't be saved. Nothing can save it. Anyway. Okay, with that, let's turn to something arguably even as important. Okay, here we go. Joe Biden deserves exactly the amount of credit we're gonna give him. It ain't much, but occasionally he does, usually the easiest stuff, but it's good, so we're gonna acknowledge it. And we've got a bit of that for you today, including the fact that the United States has formally ended the Trump era Remain in Mexico policy, which forced tens of thousands of Central American asylum seekers to wait in Mexico for US court cases. This is according to the DHS memo sent out to agency leaders just yesterday. Now, it had already been temporarily halted back on January 20th, the first day of the Biden administration. They had a review that was pending. Now, maybe you bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, you were like, oh no, they're totally gonna kill it. For me, a lot of those reviews were like, I see how this is. You want credit for it, but then in 6 weeks, it's gonna return. Well, if that was your belief and it was mine, turned out not to be true. They are actually killing it. And by the way, since January 20th, more than 11,000 migrants enrolled in it have been allowed to enter the United States to pursue asylum claims rather than being forced to wait in Mexico and potentially getting COVID, getting assaulted, getting raped, getting murdered, dying of exposure. Like, this was a purposefully brutal policy that thankfully has now been stopped.
Yeah, that was the whole point. It was consistently on this deterrent thing. It was the same thing when they were, you know, caging kids and jailing them and saying we're going to separate them from their parents, because then, you know, all these people that are trying to escape violence in their home countries, they might think twice about coming here, because we want to make sure they know we'll treat them just as bad. So that was the whole idea for the deterrent. So now, you know, at least there's some aspect of what we want to try to do something different. Because this is also what was said. A lot of times, they'd like to, the people that were opponents of any asylum seekers coming up would say, oh, well, you know, they're just running up here to destroy the country, and these aren't real cases. You know, when you go through a court system and try to determine if your asylum status is going to be approved, that's a rigorous process, and they analyze your situation. That's why it takes a minute every once in a while to take a while to do this. So this lie about, oh, they're flooding up here because they know Joe Biden's just going to let them walk through and go to your front door and start raping your daughters in their bedrooms. It's exactly what that's the push they were going for. It's all based in fear, and these guys are vicious animals. They basically called them that. Coming up here, and they've learned well from their violent home countries to come and exhibit the same kind of actions on your family. So it's been pushed for. Nothing about how this process actually works, or why we have to keep them at the border to make sure that they're, you know, have more discomfort and potentially more violence upon them.
Although there is still one way that they can theoretically do that. And so I want to turn to some of what he hasn't done yet. We're going to have more good news for you in just a second. But Judy Rabinowitz, an ACLU attorney, says Biden must swiftly move to dismantle the Trump administration's other attacks on the asylum system, including the unconscionable Title 42 order. So that's one thing that he hasn't done yet. So what's that about? Well, back on March 20th, 2020, the Department of Health and Human Services issued an emergency regulation to implement a specific aspect of US health law, blah, 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 permits the CDC to, quote, prohibit the introduction into the US of individuals when the director believes that, quote, there is a serious danger of the introduction of a communicable disease into the United States. So that is a fairly broad, vague way that you can, in theory, stop whoever you want by claiming it under that authority. And look, that is going to be an area where I think a lot of people will be a little bit more, especially in the early months of the pandemic, a little bit more understanding. Obviously, our ability to quickly screen people is way beyond anything we had access to 15 months ago. So that being that's just a convenient get out of having to admit someone for asylum free card. That's all it is. You can screen people. Hell, you could vaccinate people at the border if you wanted to. And so that is yet another one of the immigration and asylum changes that the Trump administration had done that Biden hasn't yet changed. So there's some he deserves credit for, others not.
Apologies. So as you said, no, it's a quick and easy fear tactic that should land with a significant number of people, because who does want the potential introduction of an influx of folks that have potential, you know, COVID or any other kind of communicable diseases, right? So that's a normal thing that even in across any kind of political spectrum, you may say, well, let's have some responsibility to make sure that we have this at least working in a general sense. And then it ends there. The problem is that it ends right there with the fear. And it should go on to say, so how do we make sure that we limit these types of things from happening, because folks are still coming and there's actual asylum seekers. Maybe they do carry some of these things, and maybe they did contract COVID on the way up or wherever. Do something about it. That's the part that we like to leave off. Oh, this most powerful, the richest, most powerful, strongest country in the world's history has ever seen. Guess we can't do anything about it. No, we can always do something about everything. Trust, we can. We just choose whether or not we want to or not, or if we want that to be the end game.
Yeah, with our manpower and our money, we choose what we care about. Exactly. Okay, so other news. The Biden administration has made a change to one of the rules involving exploitation of some of the most remote areas in the US that has thankfully been several months coming. They suspended oil and gas drilling leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, reversing one of former President Donald Trump's final environmental decisions before leaving office. The administration plans to further explore the environmental impacts of drilling in the fragile Alaskan region. So that was literally one of the last things that Trump did as president, It's very weird that he hadn't done it earlier, but this is something that has been battled over in DC for a couple of decades now, and it always seems like they're on the verge of destroying this area. Thankfully, he has changed that. It's not necessarily the end of the legal back and forth. There's gonna be a major legal battle, that's the prediction. Dims the prospect though of oil drilling in a pristine and politically charged expanse of Alaskan wilderness. The Republicans and Democrats have been fighting over for literally decades. Trump administration auctioned off the right to drill in the refuge's coastal plain, home to hundreds of thousands of migrating caribou and waterfowl, as well as the southern Beaufort Sea's remaining polar bears, just 2 weeks before President Biden was inaugurated. So that is good. That is obviously a very small part of what we would hope would be an all-encompassing respect for the natural environment and effort to not just conserve our resources and the natural beauty and the species and all that, but hopefully to do what's necessary to deal with climate change. We're not there yet, but these are good signs. It would have been very easy for them to either just not reverse it or to do a review that waits and maybe there's more exploitation in the meantime. I was worried about that, and thankfully it looks like I was wrong.
Yeah, and as long as people, people understand. So that was coming through 2 weeks before Biden came in. Mm-hmm. And what was the point again? It's for money. It was to serve people. Definitely. Who would make money off of it. So, we always like to talk about how scientists are lying to you about climate change, lying to you about diseases, lying to you about vaccines, all this stuff for money. We can say that scientists are doing it for money, but we can't say the businesses leaders, business people who've lobbied and paid politicians to do their bidding aren't doing it for money. It just never comes up for some reason when their entire existence is to make money. Be damned about everything else, wildlife, our natural resources, climate change, who cares? Money. And if you're in support of this because Trump just said it, why are you in support of it? Are you okay with this? Are you okay with businesses? I thought we didn't like big businesses destroying us. This goes for bipartisan type of thinkers. We don't want big businesses taking over, just doing whatever they want, controlling our government. Well, they are. Are you in favor of this? Mm-hmm. You gotta ask people the questions sometimes.
Yeah. So that's our good news for the day. There's bad news coming, but look, it's maybe in some ways it's a less satisfying position to be in. There are people who know exactly what their job is, which is to find a spin that makes the Biden administration looks good, or alternatively, to ignore all of that and just pretend that everything is bad. We dwell in kind of a middle ground where, yeah, a lot of stuff is bad. Occasionally there's good stuff and we're gonna acknowledge it. So it's not pure in the way that some people want their news to be delivered, but it is pretty true. Okay. Okay, why don't we skip to the F block? We have just a couple of minutes remaining.
I just skipped the D block, John.
No, I skipped the E block. We just did the D block, so your conspiracy theories can go away. Anyway, really fast, let's do this. Anti-maskers and anti-vaxxers aren't satisfied to just be those regular horrible things in our public health crisis. No, they gotta feel like bigger victims than that. And so you remember when Marjorie Greene implied that the thing about the stars and the Holocaust and all of that is so terrible and drew really negative reactions to her? Others watched that from out there across the country and liked it and wanted some of it for themselves. So take a look at this image. This is the owner of a hat store who had posed with the not vaccinated yellow star, which by the way is not new. There were protests in the UK a few months ago we were covering where they were wearing those. But that's what she did, and the reaction was not positive from the hat manufacturers, a powerful lobby if ever there is one. So you have the Stetson Company saying, we are aware of the situation in Nashville. We take this matter seriously and are investigating in order to take the necessary and appropriate next steps. Along with our distribution partners, Stetson condemns anti-Semitism and discrimination of any kind. And then finally, as a result of the offensive content and opinions shared by Hatworks in Nashville, Stetson and our distribution partners will cease the sale of all Stetson products. We thank you for your continued support and patience. They also lost the Gorin brothers, who said that they were horrified. And so the president saying it's making a mockery of the Holocaust, it's unacceptable. Now, the Hatworks proprietor said, in no way did I intend to trivialize the Star of David or disrespect what happened to millions of people. My hope was to share my genuine concern and fear and to do all that I can to make sure that nothing like that ever happens again. Which the first sentence says we're not trying to trivialize it. The second one says, no, I believe we're moving in that direction. It's the same. They just said it again. Like, yes, they would like me to protect my life and not give someone a deadly respiratory illness. And that is moving in the direction of the Holocaust, JR. When will this hat purveyor learn?
Well, she's been attacked by the mob is what else she said in one of those apologies. And can't believe that they're coming for me. I was just voicing my concerns of being afraid. I'm afraid to scared. And then therefore I have to now link it to the Holocaust because you're afraid and scared. What is that? What is the fear of this make you then cross over to making these Holocaust comparisons? Which by the way, after this BS apology, then she went on to still talk about on Memorial Day. Always remember, never forget. It's like the term that's usually said when you start talking about when remember what happened with the Holocaust and everything like that.
Yeah.
She used that for Memorial Day to then talk about make sure you still know your freedoms and we know the background situation for what you're still trying to say. Still comparisons to the Holocaust, still comparisons about how important this is to make sure you burn your masks or else you're gonna be sent to the gas chambers. These same comparisons continue to happen. So we don't wanna hear any more of these apologies. We wanna hear more about how about a Kangol and Stetson are doing you wrong and now the mob is coming after you just like last summer. All that, all those images that you wanna scare your people with. Yeah, yeah, but we still know the main message you're pushing. You're another Marjorie Taylor Greene and why reject her? Why reject her verbally if you're gonna do the same thing she's doing? Accept her. Call her your sister in anti-Semitism. Just do whatever you, at least be honest with who you are. Stop trying to hide at least, because the people who know who you are celebrating you for it.
Well, she was admitting who she was. And I think it's partly a case of overplaying your hand, man. Like there are people who you just have to, like they're too powerful. Like they can say stuff and get away with it. A hat store, it's easy to go to a different hat store, buy them somewhere else. You do not have the untouchable position in society that you might think that you do at your hat store. That's all I'm saying.
Hat stores.
Anyway, Dare Jackson, I know that we unfortunately don't have any more time with you, but thank you as always for helping us get through a big news Wednesday.
It's always fun. It's just because I ramble. That's all.
No worries. Had fun with you. Have a good one, man.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.